Mr. Evans, are you one? Whereabouts were you born, please?
I was born in Wales, in a small village called Hengoed, in the Rhymney Valley, about 15 miles north of Cardiff.
What did your father do for a living?
Well, my father was a baker in the main, and of course this was during the Depression years in South Wales.
Did you go to school in Hengoed?
No, I went to school. There's a school, Pengham, which has turned out a few soldiers and politicians, including the former leader of the opposition.
Is that Neil Kinnock, you mean?
Yes.
How old were you when you left school?
Well, I went to school I went to school originally at the age of four, but then I passed the examination and went to the school Pengham at the age of 11.
Where did you finish your schooling?
I finished my schooling there. My mother died rather early, and we were a large family, so I left school in order to work. So I left rather earlier than I should.
In 26? Mm.
That was, I was 26 and I went to the school Pengham, so it was in the late 20s when I left school.
Did you get a job?
Yes, I did. I got a job on the railway. Not much time passed before I realised that the only way I could get out and get on was to leave the valleys. So I then joined the Welsh Guards in 1934.
Was it easy to get in?
It was very easy to get in, yes. I had certainly had no trouble getting into the Guards at that age.
What was the training like for the Guards?
Well, it was very strict, of course. It was in the old days when the Guards depot was at Caterham in Surrey. And the term of service was 4 years for the colours and 8 years on reserve. And at that time, recruits spent 6 months at the Guards depot, and you really went through the hoop. You were taught everything down there.
Did you see any overseas service before the war?
No, not before the war. But what I did, of course, we did public duties at Buckingham Palace and St James's Palace and the Bank of England. We used to do picket at the Bank of England. The guards at that time had five stations, Aldershot, Chelsea, Wellington Barracks, Tower of London and Alexandria. And I just missed the Alexandria, the Egypt posting, but I did actually go to all the others.
Where were you and what were you doing when war was declared?
When war was declared, I had just finished my 4 years, now on Army Reserve, and I was in the police force, actually, at Plymouth.
So you were called up as a reservist?
I was called up as a reservist, yes. There were five of us from the entire force, actually, who were reservists in various forces. And I was one, so I was called up almost immediately war broke out.
How did you feel about the war declaration?
About the what?
War declaration.
Oh, declaration. the one effect it had was that instead of getting married the following spring, my wife and I decided that we would have to get married earlier. So we did, in fact, marry 2 years after war broke out. So, as my wife says quite often, the two disasters happened almost in the same week. You know? But nevertheless, we have now been married quite happily for 54 years, so it's not too bad, I think.
But did the war declaration dismay you?
No, not particularly. At that time, the one had no idea what sort of war it was going to be and how long it was going to last. And as things were, we had a couple of years where we realized that, that there was going to be a war. So there was no great surprise or shock at the time. And on reserve, of course, I was expected to be called up, and so I was.
Back into the Welsh Guards?
Back into the Welsh Guards.
Were you in any of the early bombing of Britain by the German Air Force?
Yes. There was a period when the when to our great surprise, I was recalled to Plymouth, out of the forces. This is, it must be very unusual. Out of the force temporarily, back to Plymouth, and within days, they had the first major bombing blitzes on Plymouth. My wife was there with me down in Plymouth, and we went through a very heavy bombing indeed, actually. As you know, Plymouth had a very rough time. And we survived probably 6 or 7 major blitzes in Plymouth, and quite a lot of other ones, smaller ones. As they stopped, I was recalled. Now, it's rather extraordinary that I should be sent back to Plymouth for 12 months, and that almost once the bombing started, and when it was more or less completed, I was recalled to the colours.
Which part of Plymouth were you living in when the bombs were falling?
Well, when the bombs were falling, we were actually living in the city itself. We were at Higher Compton, but of course, being on duty, I was called out immediately if there was any air raid starting, you know, the warning signals, off we went.
What did you do?
Well, I went into the town, and we endeavoured to rescue as many people as possible from the bomb buildings. I saw some extraordinary things. I saw a double-decker bus trying to get over a heap of rubble in the road, going like blazes, away from the blazes, you know, from the city centre. We turned dozens of horses loose on one occasion because they were in a burning building. We drove cars out of garages that were burning, large-sized garages. We rescued people from upper windows. We did all sorts of things, the usual things that one does. We saw barrage balloons burst on the off the Plymouth Hill. There was a naval monument that had a lightning conductor on top, and we actually saw this barrage balloon come down on top and burst and flop, and, you know, there were lots of extraordinary things that happened there.
You were a policeman then?
I was, yes. Yes, I went back from the... I was sent back from the guards to the police force for 12 months. I feel really, I suppose there was this... they must have known what was coming, I think. I mean, it was beautifully timed. Not from my point of view, but from their point of view. It really was a most extraordinary incident.
What were policemen expected to do in a bombing raid?
Well, they were expected to do what I've always said, you know. I mean, to be aware of what was going on, to perform rescues, to clear roads, to help in every way possible, to put out... for example, I can remember they were showering incendiaries down on the city centre, and we were running around with sandbags trying to put them out, because obviously they were markers for the heavy bombing to come. And actually, in a small churchyard off George Street in Plymouth, where I saw a laurel bush was lit up by the incendiaries, and I went down to try and put it out. And the heavy stuff started to come down, and I went flat on the ground. And as I raised myself up on my arms, I saw this gravestone which said, "Here lies the body." And I can remember at the time thinking that it wouldn't be long before I joined him. But no, it was generally to make oneself useful and to do what one could to lessen the damage and save lives.
What was your beat during the Blitz?
Well, it was the city centre. It was the city centre. That's where my station was, actually.
What rank of policeman were you?
I was just a policeman, a constable.
What did you think public morale was like in the Plymouth Blitz?
Absolutely marvellous. It was really extraordinary how people survived and how cheerful they all were, how helpful they all were. I can remember on Plymouth Hoe, a man and his wife and children. He was in a dressing gown. Everybody was in a garb. They were watching their house burn, and they were hugging each other. And they were almost laughing because they were all right. When you're in situations like that, you realise what the priorities are. You know, it doesn't really matter. Property, possessions don't really matter. It's the fact that the families were there and they were alive. And that was the main thing.
Did you ever hear anybody who despaired or whose morale cracked?
No. I can honestly say that I never did. My wife shared the experiences with me there. There were occasions when it got rather tough that we laid on coaches, buses to take women and children out of the city for the night, for the period of the night. And there was an area off Mutley Plain where every night they queued up. And we organised it so that people stood in one queue for Totneys, another queue for Paignton, and so on. And it was extraordinary how well-behaved and well-disciplined everyone was.
Which part of Mutley Plain was that?
Well, that was just off Mutley Plain. There were some side streets off on the eastern side of Mutley Plain. And there were room to get coaches in and line them up and take them out.
Did you personally use public shelters?
No, I personally never did. And my wife, we had a shelter in the garden at home where my wife and child were sheltering, of course. While I was out on duty. And certainly, you know, if the bombs are falling, we try to get, into some sort of shelter. For those people who know Plymouth, I spent quite a little time inside a clock tower at Derry's Cross, of which I had the key, because it was on my particular beat. And it was Derry's Cross, it's like a column, it's a sort of a small tower with a clock on top. And I was actually in there when everything around me was destroyed. George Street was destroyed, the old hotel behind there was destroyed. And Derry's clock remained untouched in the middle of it all.
Was there much hatred of the air crews who were carrying out the bombing?
No, I don't think, I can't recall that there would be any sort of, I never saw anyone sort of wave their fist at the air or anything of that nature. I don't think anyone was very pleased with the Germans bombing the centres of towns where so many civilians were being killed. I suppose, really, that in later years, when the Germans complained about being bombed, it was really you know, it was being visited upon themselves, I think. So I don't think anyone had an enormous sympathy for them afterwards. Because at the time they were bombing places like Plymouth and Coventry. They were so much in the ascendancy, generally, that they felt that they would never be bombed themselves. In fact, I think that Goring said so.
No, you didn't stay in the Welsh Guards.
No, I got back after this session, and I was at Sandown Park in Esher. The commanding officer was Lord Glenusk. The adjutant was Lord Delamere, which sounds like the Guards, doesn't it? I hadn't been back very long when I was. The commanding officer sent for me and said that I'd been recommended for a commission. What did I think about that? And so I said, well, this is rather sudden. Would you mind if I had a couple of days to think about it? He said, yes. So I went back and I decided I would like to be commissioned and get on with the war. And so I was.
Which battalion of the Welsh Guards had you been in?
The 1st Battalion of the Welsh Guards. There was, of course, only one battalion before the war. During the war, there was a 2nd Battalion. But I was in the 1st Battalion. Yes.
So what happened to you once you were recommended for a commission?
Well, I then... I then went to the OCTU and I was commissioned to the South Staffordshire Regiment. Because of my previous service in the Guards, I was commissioned. I was only a second lieutenant for 1 week, I never put up one pip. I immediately put up two pips. I thought at the time that I'd been commissioned a full lieutenant right away, but having my record later on, I see that I was second lieutenant for a week. That's my gosh, yeah, somewhere.
How did the South Staffs like having a guardsman amongst them?
Well, I think they were quite happy. The except for certain. Having been brought up in a pretty hard school in the Guards, it was sometimes a bit difficult to stand on the parade ground and see sloppy drill. So I think that I sharpened them up a little bit, and certainly one or two sergeant majors had to sort of change their habits a bit. But I don't think that did them any harm. In fact, I'm sure it did them a lot of good.
Do you remember the year in which you were commissioned? Presumably 42 or 43, wasn't it?
Yes. I have actually...
doesn't matter if you've got...
can't remember specifically, although I've got details somewhere.
What did you do then after commissioning in Britain?
I joined the South Staffs, and we were in barracks, various parts actually, at Grandshaft Barracks in Dover, and so on. But I went, I didn't spend very much time at the battalion. Cross-country runner, shortly after I joined the battalion, I was sent to a battle school on the sandhills between Sandwich and Deal, the 59th Divisional Battle School. And I managed to... break the record or something for the cross country there, and I was invited to come back. They asked for me to go back as an instructor, and I went back and I was instructing there in the battle school, the Fisher Knight Divisional Battle School, for some time.
Can you tell me about how you first went abroad?
Yes, well, the D-Day came. We were then stationed near Canterbury, and I was put in charge of the transport at that time.
The battalion transport?
Yes, it wasn't. I wasn't a transport officer, but from the point of view of taking the stuff across just shortly after D-Day, I think it was D-plus 17 or something like that, I was put in charge of that, and we actually went from somewhere in Kent on the Thames. I've forgotten the name of the place just for the moment.
Gravesend?
Yes, I think it probably was Gravesend. Anyway, it doesn't matter very much. We went from there, and I landed on the D-Day beaches I think it was D-17 or something like that. Anyway, certainly wasn't any closer.
Which battalion of the South Staffs was this?
I was with the 1st/6th battalion of the South Staffs Regiment. There was the 1st, 5th, 1st, 6th, and 1st, 7th. I get a bit mixed up with this. It was the 1st... it was with the 1st, 6th Queens later, and I think it was the 1st, 5th South Staffords, in fact.
What did you see on the beaches once you landed?
Well, when we landed, things were cleared up to a very great extent. There were, of course, sunken ships around. There were tanks and things littered about the beach. But nothing very much. They had cleared things up pretty well. And the whole thing was very well organized. We got off the beaches without any trouble at all, of course. There was no difficulty there.
What were you expected to do once you were ashore?
We were sent to an area where everybody was collected together and sorted out, and then sent on to the various units. My particular battalion were at a place called Calmes, C-A-M-B-E-S, Calmes, near the Kapike airfield, next door to the Canadians, as a matter of fact. The Canadians were there with their artillery and so on. So that's really the first place where we settled down.
How soon did you get into action?
Well, we were in action fairly quickly, fairly soon after that. The first action we were in was seriously, we were in defence, and we did stupid things like dig in woodland areas. In those early days, you were taught previously that you always had to take cover. So if there was a wood, you got into this wood, you dug a trench, and you just hoped no one would see you. But of course, it was the most stupid thing imaginable, because the Germans realized that you were going to go into this cover, and they had artillery and mortars ranged on those particular areas. In retrospect, it would have been better to have dug trenches in an open field on a backward slope, on a reverse slope, because it's pretty obvious Now it's pretty obvious that they were, that's the sort of place they were going to hit. So we did suffered quite a lot of casualties, actually, even in a defensive position. So it was quite a relief to get on and do some fighting. And the first battle that we took part in was Bretvillette, a small Welsh, small French village called Bretvillette.
How do you spell that?
Bretvillette, Bretvillette. When we went into the battle itself, I was the second in command of the company, and the company commander, whose name was Major Tom Rutherford, went in with the three platoons. I followed up with the company headquarters, company headquarters being people like the company clerk and cooks and various people. Unfortunately, the first casualty in the battalion, in the company rather, was the company commander, Major Tom Rutherford. So I found him clutching an arm full of shrapnel, and he uttered those famous words. He handed me his map case and he said, "Carry on, John." So I then had to catch up with the rest of the company. What I didn't realise was that most of them had taken cover while there was a lot of mortaring going on. They were taking cover while until the mortaring stopped. So I took company headquarters right through them, and we captured we captured the first objective, actually, with company headquarters. The others followed up. Anyway, that was quite an unusual little battle. It did lead to...
Which was Rutherford's company?
This was B Company. It was A Company of the 1st 5th. The reason I get mixed up is because I'm... Later on, I'm B Company of the 1st 6th Queens, so now this is A Company of the 1st 5th South Stafford. This particular battle took the objective, and the orchard through which we went was mined, and we lost one or two there. There was an episode where the man who carried the set, the 18 set, on his shoulder, you know, it was a great heavy radio sets in those days for communication, he stepped on a mine, and we went round around the orchard eventually, and we took the objective. But we had to get this 18 set, and there was a chap called Private Drain who volunteered to go in for it, and he did. And he crawled and tested the ground as he went, and he came up to this chap who had been killed, and took the set off him and dragged it back, which was essential. And for that, he got a military medal. So that was the first, tremendously individual, courageous act that that I witnessed.
Was he the type of man whom you would have expected previously to have won a decoration?
Not really, no. Quiet little chap, and quite often, of course, it turned out that the quiet little chaps were the ones who were very brave. And the big blustery ones were the ones who sort of were inclined to huddle up in shock sometimes.